This is Chris Seacrest with the Carolina Reporter speaking to Dr. Brian Helmuth. How did your passion for the coast and its wildlife first surface?
It's funny, I grew up in landlocked upstate New York, and so you'd think that, you know, I'd end up studying kind of the wildlife in the woods, but I started scuba diving when I was about 14 years old and started studying the canal boats of the Finger Lakes. And I love scuba diving. My parents took me to the coast of coastal Maine, and I just really love the underwater world. And the passion just grew from there. I love scuba diving. I love being underwater. And it just went from there.
In all your years in the field, which experiences have been the most fulfilling?
It's really hard to pick just one. I just love being out in nature. I mean, there are a couple that stand out. I've gotten to do some really cool things. I've gotten to live underwater for 10 days at a time. I've been underwater with killer whales before. I've swum with dolphins. Really just had some incredible opportunities to be around the world. And I've seen a lot of changes, too. I mean, that's what's gotten me to where I am today, is that I've seen, even over the relatively brief career, about 20 years, I've seen just a lot of changes in nature.
How do you reconcile with those who reject climate change?
Climate change is a really hard concept to grasp. And so in some ways, I understand where skeptics are coming from. I'm fortunate that I've gotten to see climate change firsthand. I've gotten to go around the world, and there are places where I go 1 year. For example, there's a place in Belize I've gone where I studied the coral reefs for 5 years. And there was a period of time where temperatures increased by about a degree. I went back the next year, and they were just gone. It's just a parking lot. And ever since that time, it's just been oozing algae where there used to be these beautiful corals. And again and again, we see instances like that. And so I've seen them firsthand. I have colleagues that have seen that firsthand. And it's easy to understand climate change once you've seen those kind of case studies firsthand, and once you've had the opportunity to study the mechanisms. I think it's harder to understand climate change when you don't have the background, when you're only kind of looking in your own backyard. And so I think in a lot of cases, people kind of struggle to understand this kind of vague concept of why something like carbon dioxide, something that we breathe out, would have such a huge impact on the rest of the world. And so I think, you know, that's really what I want to try to do is convey the experiences that I've had, that other scientists have, to the rest of the world, because even though this is in a lot of ways counterintuitive, it really has a huge impact on all of us.
You have the nation's attention for 1 minute. What exactly would you tell them?
I think what I tell them is what I've seen. I want them to understand that climate change is very real. I want them to understand that this is something that we take very seriously, but we don't throw up our hands in despair. I mean, this is not the Chicken Little scenario where the world is falling. It's something that we take very seriously, but like a lot of the other challenges that America has faced, I think it's something that if we can come together and tackle it as a unified people, we really can do something about it.
Let's say the Speaker of the U.S. House called today and said, what can we do in the next 20 years? What would you say?
Yeah, I think the changes in policy are the biggest thing we can do. I mean, and again, I want to qualify this by saying, as a scientist, I don't tell people what to do. I tell people what I've seen. I tell people what the consequences of the actions are likely to be, and that I work with people like you're saying the Speaker of the House would then enact policy. So I would be very careful not to say you should do this, but that being said, I would say the number one thing we need to do is try to find creative solutions to cutting down on our emissions. And the second piece of that is to realize that we have a lot of changes coming up and that we have to prepare for those changes.
You wrote in a column a few years ago, in 2008, mm-hmm. I believe, a number of solution-oriented, bipartisan climate-related bills are being considered in the Congress. We need to urge those to move ahead. You said this in 2008. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about our progress since then?
Yeah, our progress on those, unfortunately, has been pretty dismal, and they're stalled right now. And, you know, this is me speaking as a citizen rather than as a scientist. I think right now we're in a situation where politics are so divisive right now, and there is no bipartisan movement forward, that we're really kind of mired in the muck right now. And I really hope we can get back to the point where we can have open and honest discussions, because I think there are a lot of things to talk about in terms of the effects of climate change that all have to be on the table. Climate change not only impacts nature, it impacts our national security, it impacts our food security, it impacts our health, and it impacts our economy in both negative ways, obviously, but in some positive ways in terms of coming up with new solutions to solving our energy problems. And all these things have to be on the table when we're discussing what we're going to do about climate change. All those are policy decisions. They're not science decisions, but science can provide information to those policy decisions. So I really hope we can back out of the rut we're kind of stuck in now and start having those discussions again so we can move forward.
How has your field benefited from using Google projects up until this point?
Up until this point, we've used things like Google Maps, Google Earth, Google Oceans. We work a lot with K-12 teachers, K-12 students. We try to give them information about what we study in the field. In a lot of cases, we take teachers to the field with us. And the Google products are a great way to link maps, link images, kind of give a sense of what it's like to be in the field without actually taking students there. I get a feeling we really haven't capitalized on kind of the full range of all the products that Google has available. So I'm really kind of excited about learning what else is out there.
What is the benefit to a presence like Google getting involved with the issue of climate change?
Yeah, I'm really excited that Google is really taking this seriously. And obviously, they have a huge presence, and they have this incredible opportunity to communicate with people all over the world and in some really creative ways. And one of the things they're asking us to think about is this kind of one of the ways they're asking us to think about this is through computational thinking. And at least my understanding of this is it's taking really kind of complex problems and breaking them down into really kind of simple parts and then putting them back together in new ways that make sense to people. So again, climate change is a great example of that. It's a really complex problem that on the surface seems kind of chaotic and almost impossible to understand, but if we can break it down into ways that are understandable, and then take those pieces, convey them one at a time to the public using some of these kind of smart technologies that Google has, I think then all of a sudden it's not so mysterious, it's not so esoteric. It really starts making a difference to people if they understand why it is that there's a connection between what comes out the tailpipe of their car and why we're starting to see crops die, why we're starting to see changes in productivity of our farms and our fisheries.
What would be the ideal result for you after this 3-day meeting? What's realistic?
So in 3 days, this is going to be a lot of information packed in there. And I have some very, I would say, modest computer skills. And so I'm hoping to pick up as much as I can while I'm out there. And I want to bring it back here, and I want to use it in my teaching here at USC. I want to use it in the outreach we do to classrooms. And ultimately, I want to use it as part of my research if I can. I want to use it in any way that I can to take the information we learn from research and convey it to other people creatively. So I think the best case scenario is if I can just come up with some kind of new exciting ways to tell the story of what I do to the rest of the world, then I'm going to think it's a success.
An expedition to the Galapagos, the Arctic, or Antarctica is the prize for the best presentations. What would winning a trip like that mean to your research?
I think it'd be great. I mean, I've gotten to go to a lot of those places. I haven't been to the Galapagos, which would be great, but I have been to South Georgia Island off of the Antarctic. What would be different this time would be that it wouldn't just be a research trip. It would be an opportunity to really try to tell a story to the public, and that would be fundamentally different than what I've done before. I mean, I try to convey my research to the public whenever I can, but it hasn't really been the focus of an expedition yet. So, for example, I've gotten to go on icebreakers to parts of the Antarctic before, and I've gone scuba diving to a bunch of different places, but it's all been centered on the research. If I got to do this, it really would be a new opportunity to try to tell the world the story, and that would first and foremost be the point of the expedition, and that would really be exciting.